Under the Hood. Follow us on the gram at IGJ Hood and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights at 7 right here on ESPN 1000 and the TuneIn app. We'll hear from Alex Brown coming up at 8:20. His thoughts about the Super Bowl, get his pick. That'll be coming up in our next segment right here on ESPN 1000. Do you know who Steven Souza is? Do you know who Steven Souza is? Steven Souza Jr. That is the representation of the low bar that's been set by the 2020 Cubs. That he is now with the Cubs. Castellanos is not with the Cubs. It's somewhat head-scratching of what's happening at Clark and Addison, juxtaposing that with what is going on at 35th and Vec with the White Sox. And so let's kind of talk about both here. And so as I was reading from Jesse Rogers' piece on ESPN.com, I also saw this on theathletic.com about how maybe it's just normal, the normal course of business, or maybe it's the reality gleaned from the Cubs convention that fans are uneasy about the centenary approach to the offseason. But the team is close to signing outfielder Steven Souza Jr. And now it's officially happened. Now, give me some numbers on Souza. The injuries limited Souza to just 72 games in 2018. Souza's best season came in 2017 with the Tampa Bay Rays. He had 30 home runs. He drove in 78 and walked 87 times in 142 games. A right-handed hitter, he hit only three of his home runs against lefties. His slash line was 262, 388, and 397 against them. He slugged better against righties, but his average and on-base percentage both suffered. The slash line of 230, 338, 447. That's not great. It's not great. And it's not the splash that you and I are used to as of late in the Ricketts administration. And so instead of being able to talk about the good from the Cubs at the Cubs convention, there is that conversation about farmers market and some of the things around the ballpark instead of what's in the ballpark. Because no matter the amenities, no matter that they opened up some restaurant across the street from Wrigley Field, or if they got restaurants around Wrigley Field, doesn't matter. All you care about is whether or not the team is going to win or not. But instead of talking about the good of this team, Tom Ricketts wanted to let you know about things that have nothing to do with the on-field product. You know, like,
what our promise for the next 10 years is to continue to have the best relationship with our fans of any sport in the world, any professional sports team in the world. And that starts with the Marquee Network. The Marquee Network. What do you have against the Marquee Network? Believe me, you won't be booing about that in a year. You guys won't, you won't be booing about the Marquee Network in 1 year.
I've been to some Sox fests and never heard that response. And if you're looking for it, usually it would be at Sox Fest. Boo! And Kenny's saying, what the hell are you booing me for? We gave you Ken Griffey Jr. That's not exactly what you would expect at Cubs convention, but that is kind of the feeling, right? Among some Cub fans, and the response like,
what do you have against the Marquee Network? You won't be booing about that in a year. What do you have against the Marquee Network? You won't be booing about that in a year.
What's the plan for the offseason, Theo?
The plan this offseason is, given the, you know, the landscape that we have this at this moment in time, and every club goes into the offseason with, you know, certain parameters and certain factors that they have to either take advantage of or operate around, do everything that we can to accomplish two overriding goals. One is improve the 2020 club to put the best team possible on the field and try to win the division and make it deep into October and win a World Series. And then two, and this one has particular emphasis for us as we get, you know, closer to 2021, is operate with a long-term view as well and do everything we can to improve the long-term health of the baseball operation and to ensure that we, you know, don't have a significant drop-off when we get to the inevitable transition away from this core group of guys to the next Cubs team.
Did you hear what he said towards like 15 seconds left in the soundbite? That was a minute soundbite. Well, like 15 seconds left, he talked about the long view for next year also. What? No, that's not what you want to hear, right? It's not about the long view. I will direct you to ESPN.com, friend of the program, David Schoenfield. He's always on our program to give us the national perspective of baseball. As we talk about this on Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, the TuneIn app. The question was, who is the best team or who is the team to beat in the National League Central? It just might be the Cincinnati Reds. Ah, so you scroll down and look for the Cubs part of this column, right? And so it says here, the Cubs, hamstrung by self-imposed restriction on their payroll, have done nothing of note coming off a disappointing 84-win season and have lost Cole Hamels to the Braves and manager Joe Maddon to the Angels. So he also goes through the fan graphs and talks about the war. On the computer screen graphics, FanGraphs likes the Cubs with a 40.6 war. And that's the highest of any team in the National League. But he gives a lot of credit to the Reds. The Reds scored 113 fewer runs than the Cubs last year. And that's before you even get to some of the potential defensive issues here. Talks about Moustakas, talks about some of the war numbers there. But I want you to just think about the Cubs and then compare that to, say, Milwaukee and say, teams like the Reds for the future. I don't think the Pirates are in that conversation. They finished last and traded away one of their best players for two prospects. So that's not necessarily what we're looking at. But that wild card Brewers team that won 89 games and lost Moustakas and Grandal combined for 63 home runs. Now, that is going to be some offense that they're going to need for this upcoming season. But what about the St. Louis Cardinals, though? The St. Louis Cardinals. 91 games won last year, have basically done nothing. They lost Ozuna to the Braves while signing Korean lefty Kwang Young Kim. So they're pretty much standing pat. Are they still going to be the top team in the National League Central? Does Theo take a long view of this and says, okay, because the Brewers will not be the Brewers in his from his standpoint in 2020, does that mean the Cubs can slip in there? Well, how can the Cubs be a real contender in the National League Central when you're still not even sure if Chris Bryant's going to be around or not? Is Bryant going to be part of this team? If you take Bryant off, aren't the Cubs taking a step backwards? And who replaces that production? See, it's too many question marks. It's too many. There's more question marks now than when Maddon was here. And there was always, hey, how come the Cubs can't hit the last couple of years? They've gone through a two-year slump offensively. And so you're trying to determine if you're a Cubs fan, like, is the juice worth the squeeze? Can I get emotionally invested in the team that didn't spend any money here in the offseason? That's not right. In this market, even though you spent some bad money or questionable money or money that was not productive on the field, you still got to try, right? Now, you juxtapose that to the White Sox and what the White Sox are doing. The Sox have won the offseason. Does it mean that they are going to win their division? I believe that the Sox are in the right direction where they can win at least 10 more games for this upcoming season. And then in 2021, they can still add more and be on their way to compete for the American League Central and be one of the best teams in the American League. Jeff Passan on with Waddle and Sylvie earlier talking about the realistic expectations based on the roster for the White Sox.
The White Sox, plain and simple, have had a bonanza blockbuster offseason. And I don't think they're the best team in the American League Central. I think it is well within the realm of possibility that they finish third in the American League Central because the Twins are going to score 900 runs and because the Indians pitching staff is better than anyone realized. Like they might have the best pitching staff in baseball. Like it's that good. But the White Sox should be a playoff team this year. Like let's look at the playoff contenders in the American League. You got the Yankees, the Rays, and the Red Sox in the East. I don't think the Blue Jays are there yet. You got the three teams in the Central. And then the West is sort of interesting. Like, Astros aren't the same without Gerrit Cole. I don't think that the Angels have enough pitching at this point, even though they added Anthony Rendon to Mike Trout. Rangers are trying right now, but Are they good enough? I don't think they're quite there. I think they're probably a guy or two short. I don't know, man. I don't see there being a ton of competition in the American League, and the White Sox, in having Robert up on opening day, in getting Jimenez for a full season, in adding Keuchel to a rotation that already has Giolito, and I'd like to think Cease is going to get better, and you're going to get something from Kopech, and bringing Abreu back, and getting Encarnacion and Grandal, the step forward Moncada and Anderson took last year. A bullpen that's actually, honestly, like, I like a bullpen that has Colome, Cishek, Bummer, Fry, Herrera. Like, that to me could be a strength.
Ah. So, when you hear that 2 minutes, Eric, are you... See, I'm not going to go all in unless you go all in first.
Then we're not going all in yet. Like, I'm not sitting here thinking playoff expectations. I'm excited for the season.
Right.
I think they're going to take a step, and it's going to look more like it's going to look better. It's going to look more fun. But I'm not willing to say playoffs yet. I will not let myself be let down to think that.
I will not take the leap unless we make the leap together. And I'm cautiously optimistic because I see how this works, right? You build towards something. And you just, because if you go all in and go over the top now and say they're going to be a 90-win ball club and there's an injury or there's still bunting and sacrificing trying to win games 2-1, because that's still Renteria in there now, I still believe the Sox won't be any good until they change the manager. That's just, like, I can't see the Sox having all these great moments and winning divisions and all that with Renteria as a manager until I see something different. He's got to be able to adapt with what he could have, and that is a powerful lineup. So I'm going to wait. But I am impressed on paper, especially from the pitching standpoint, where they are, right?
Right. I just don't want to get in front of my skis because this offseason's been so good and so fun.
Look at us trying to insulate ourselves.
We are tapping ourselves down, dousing ourselves with cold water right now.
I love the Sox, but I don't
want to
be hurt again.
It's so true.
Don't hurt me, Sox. Please don't hurt me.
We've got every excuse in the book right now. Like, she's nice to me. Like, when you're not around, she's really nice.
I love you, but I can't be hurt again. So we're going to wait before I say I do.
We're scared. We're scared to get on the knee. Yep.
It's like the Sox are great to date, but I can't make the leap yet.
Yes.
It's so sad. But you know what? It's just with a standpoint of just being cautiously optimistic. That's what it is. Just like, okay, it's good. It's 10 games better. The pitching will get you there. Still got to figure out the closer situation. But nonetheless, you still got to just the offense and then the young players for the future, Robert and young players like Kopech and Madrigal and Vaughn. You know, you got some heavy-duty young players, but they're all suspects. They're not prospects yet. They're all suspects. Got to see. You know, I've never asked. Oh, Tyler, are you a Cubs or Sox fan?
I'm Cubs.
Okay, yep. So you're not in this conversation. No. Get out. All right, you can get out.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Hi, everybody.
On ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Get out!
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Follow on Twitter at TweetJHood.
We'll find out from a gambling standpoint where we should put our money for the Super Bowl coming up with our value bet segment at 8:50 with Matt Friedman from the Action Network. We turn now to NBC sports analyst, former Chicago Bear, the great Alex Brown, friend of the program, is with us as we get ready for Super Bowl Sunday. He joins me, Jonathan Hood, on Under the Hood on ESPN 1000 in the TuneIn app. What's going on, Alex?
What's happening, Jay Hood? How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm looking forward to Sunday because I think this is a coin flip matchup. Before I ask you about your thoughts, I just want to get your feeling about the Bears, because I have no other choice but to think about the Bears when we see these two going at it with San Francisco and Kansas City. How far do you think the Bears are from being in one of these big games?
Oh, man. Depending on which route we try to go, I think if we try to go the KC route and have the offense lead, I think we're a little further away than actually trying to run the football and relying on our defense to make plays and kind of win the games for us. So I think these are two distinctly different approaches to the game, where Kansas City is trying to score a lot of points, and they haven't been known for their defense in quite a while. And then you got a team like San Francisco who leans on their front four. I mean, they're just nasty. They rush the quarterback with four, and they got a bunch of first round picks in that free agent and D4 they brought in. So they are, I think they're stacked and they're ready to go. If their secondary tackles, I think it's going to be really hard for Kansas City to move that ball up and down the field, because he's not going to have time to be in a 5-7-step drop. So I think the Bears are closer to being a San Francisco team, because if you can look at just the NFC Championship game, you see Garoppolo. He did what he's supposed to do. I mean, he didn't do a whole lot to help win that game. They just ran the ball, and they played great defense. So I think the Bears are closer to that than having that spread it out, throw it around, we're going to outscore you type of team.
You think Nagy's watching these playoffs and watching the Super Bowl? Think he's keeping his eye on it? Because if he did, he would realize that, hey, you know what, maybe I should run the football. That's the theme of these games that we've been seeing. You can still run the football well and be able to move your offense. And this is, look, Garoppolo can win the game with his arm, but what we saw is, as you mentioned, the San Francisco's, what they saw on the defensive side, said, okay, we're just going to keep running and see if the Packers can stop us. Packers couldn't stop them. And so Mostert ran the football well. This is what the Bears need to do. Either adding another back or going to Montgomery more often, but you need to run that football. That's what I see in the playoffs. Why can't the Bears do that?
Yep. I think they have a really, really promising young running back in David Montgomery. I think the distinct difference that you see is when San Francisco found something that they deemed a weakness of Green Bay, they didn't let off the pedal. They didn't try to get cute. They continued to do the same thing because they're just trying to win. They're not trying to win a certain way. They're just trying to win the game. So what you also see with San Francisco is that regardless of how much they gave up to get Garoppolo, how much they paid Garoppolo, doesn't matter, because you want to win. So if he's not helping you win, I mean, I shouldn't say not helping you win, but he's not leading the charge for you winning, that's okay, because you're winning. So, like, that's the whole concept. It has to be just winning. And whether that's running the ball or finding that weakness in the other team, and when you find it, don't change it. Don't change anything. Stay right there with it. So that's what I see with San Francisco and what they do. If they find something that Kansas City is, I'm going to say, struggling with, they're going to stay right there with it. Now, if they find that thing or whatever that is throwing short passes because they can't tackle Emmanuel Sanders or Deebo or whomever are born, if they can't tackle them, then they'll continue to do that. So I just think they try to find that weakness and they stay with it. They don't have a progression of plays. It's just, well, if we found this, we're just going to stay with this right here, because that is what's going to help us win this particular game.
Alex Brown from NBC Sports Chicago with Jonathan Hood on Under the Hood on ESPN 1000 and the TuneIn app. I am really interested, Alex, in this game on both sides of the football, because as dynamic as some of this offense is defensively, when you have Chris Jones for the Chiefs and you have Nick Bosa for the 49ers, and it goes on and on of terrific players, is there one guy you're keying in on the defensive side you're looking forward to watching?
Oh, man. Well, Bosa for sure, but DeForest Buckner, I mean, I think he's going to be, because they move him around, so you got to know where he's at. And if he's in the middle, and quarterbacks, as good as they are, I mean, regardless of how good they are, they see that pressure that comes right up the middle. That is the pressure that can get to them the soonest. So when we had Tank Johnson rolling, we had Tommy Harris rolling, like, that's when you saw quarterbacks trying to get out of there And that's where they see the pressure in the beginning, or at the soonest, I should say. So if DeForest Buckner, if he can get that push and they can wreak havoc up the middle, oh, it's going to be a long day. I mean, they're going to – Patrick Mahomes, he better get his running shoes on because – and then you got guys like Bosa and D Ford that can run him down. So – and these guys, the corners and the safeties, they kind of feed off of that. So any errant pass, they're going to pick it off and then think about what they're trying to do in this game. Their thing is running the football. If they can do that, they're also eating up the clock and keeping that high-powered offense off the field. So if you turn the ball over, you might as well just say there's another 6 minutes gone of the game because you're not going to get the ball back until at least one or two first downs, and then 6 minutes is gone. So they got to take care of the football, and I'll be watching DeForest Buckner for sure.
Who's the best offensive player? Who's the best offensive player that we're going to see on Sunday?
I think it'll be Kittle. I think he's going to be the key. Whether that's blocking or so the most valuable player, I mean, I think it's going to be Kittle because he is a hell of a blocker. And the kid, once he gets the ball, he is an animal. It's kind of heartbreaking to think he went 100 picks after we picked our guy, you know? So,
as it happens when you got a blindfold on and you're just picking it, you know, that's what happens. Yeah. It's amazing.
Absolutely.
Good Lord, man. I have not talked to you since the change by the Bears regarding what they want to do in training camp. I was disillusioned by the Bears' choice of not practicing in Bourbon anymore and moving it to Halas Hall. When you read about that, what was your initial reaction?
Well, that's all I've known. So my first year was at Bourbon A. That was the first year that they were at Bourbon A. And it was a blast. And just watching that community grow. And I think just so many people rely on that moment or that brief time, those 2-3 weeks or whatever, with all the traffic of bringing in people for those businesses. So I think it's sad, honestly, for the Bears to leave, but I think they built up their facility where a lot of teams are doing this. They're doing it at their facility. So it's a little different because the players aren't going to stay there. They're going to stay at home. So I think there is something you get from having that camaraderie where it's just the players. You're sleeping in the same place. You're doing all the things together, and there isn't at 6, 8 o'clock, we all go home. There isn't that. There's, you walk back to your room, you walk back to your dorm, and you really don't go anywhere too far. So, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a sad moment just for the city of Bourbon A, Kankakee, because they lose a lot of money, a lot of foot traffic down there during that time. But I think the Bears have everything they need at Halas Hall now to be able to support a big function like that. And listening to what they're saying, they'll still have moments where, or times and practices where the fans will be able to come in. Now that I can't wait to see because, hey, to try to funnel in 8,000 people, yeah, okay. I don't think that's going to work that well. So we'll see how that works. I think they're going to pull the plug on that pretty quick.
I never thought there was. You ever see the day, Alex, where the Bears were just so afraid of the fans booing 10 in a hot summer day in Bourbon A that they're going to move it inside so you can't see those wounded ducks he's throwing.
Man,
I remember.
It's crazy. The last first round quarterback we had, well, they booed the hell out of him, too. And he had thick enough skin to handle it. So, I don't know. I mean, if he can't handle that, it's going to be tough. I don't know if he can or can't handle it. I haven't actually talked to him. But yeah, if he can't handle being booed, then there's a problem with that anyway. So, I think he just needs to focus on getting better at putting the ball where it's supposed to be. And I think the coaches have to do a better job of not asking him to do too much, and using, you spent a third round pick on Montgomery. Use the kid. The kid is hungry. I was in the gym the other day. I saw him in there. Talked to him for about 45 minutes. I mean, he's a fantastic kid, a driven kid. You can see it on his face. And you know what I mean? The kid, he's from Cincinnati. He got that look on his face like he's from the crib. That boy is hungry. I'm telling you, he is hungry. He wants it. I know there's a lot of guys right now at this moment. They're in Miami at the Super Bowl. This kid's in the gym. Okay? I'm not predicting a huge year for him unless they give him the football, because I don't know if they're going to give him the ball. But if they do give him the ball, the kid will be in shape where he can handle it, and he's going to have a breakout year if they give him the ball.
I miss Bourbonnais when your defense was strong and y'all just kept batting the ball down on Rex and Lovey said, "Let the ball go through, Jiminy Christmas. Let the ball go through." In front of everybody.
That was kind of that time where it's like, well, Rex, you know what? This is the best defense you're going to face all year. So don't worry about it. It's all right.
Jiminy Christmas, stop batting the ball down. Let it go through, Jiminy Christmas.
Yes. Oh, Lovey. Oh, Lovey.
Who are you leaning toward Sunday? Who do you like, Kansas City or San Francisco?
Man, the old saying is defense wins championships, and this is a championship game. So to say that Kansas City can't stop the run when they just shut down Derrick Henry and that running team, I think they got a shot. I think it's the team that takes care of the football. So I'm a lean towards San Francisco on this one, but I'd like to see the Chiefs win. If it comes down to a field goal, you know who I got.
Oh yeah,
you know
Robbie.
You know who I got, and I think he's gonna win it for him if it comes down to that. But I think it'll be a real close game. But I'm gonna lean towards San Francisco on this one.
All right, my friend. I hope that you enjoy the Super Bowl, and let's talk again soon. I appreciate it as always.
Thanks, man. Absolutely.
It is Alex Brown of the NBC Sports Chicago breaking down the Super Bowl and the Bears with us right here on Chicago's Home for Sports. Tales from the Hood is next.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, Chicago's Home for Sports. It's Under the Hood. Follow us on the gram at IGJ Hood and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's Home for Sports, ESPN 1000.
Glad that you're with us here for Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the TuneIn app. It's now time for Tales from the Hood right here on ESPN 1000, brought to you by Northwestern Basketball, Chicago's Big Ten team. For tickets, go to nusports.com, nusports.com for Northwestern Basketball. All right, Tales from the Hood, stories of sports, entertainment, everything else in between. There's a number of stories here we got to get to. Oh, I see this here. First of all, from Adam Schefter from the Calgary Corner. Trey Roberson, thought to be the top CFL free agent this year, will sign with the Chicago Bears per a league source. Roberson shows the Bears over 9 other offers. Bears are expected to give Roberson the largest CFL to NFL compensation since Miami signed Cameron Wake. So Trey Roberson, I believe is how you pronounce his name, from Calgary, the corner, a top CFL free agent now in the NFL and now playing with the Bears. See how that works out. Again, there's going to be a need for secondary help for the Chicago Bears coming up. So maybe Roberson's the guy. That needle in the haystack, that diamond in the rough. We'll find out. All we can do is find out. I have friends that cover the CFL, but I'm not putting them on. That would waste our time. Some stories here from sports, entertainment, everything else in between, like a bacon-scented patch has been developed to help people go vegan. A patch infused with the scent of bacon has been developed by Oxford University scientists to help people with their meat cravings when they go vegan or vegetarian. It's similar to the size of a nicotine patch and have the drawings of a red cross through the two rashers of bacon on it. So it's instead of like when you see the red cross, you see the actual red cross. It's actually two rashers of bacon. See, that would make me more hungry.
Right. When you smell bacon, all you want to do is eat bacon. So I don't see how this helps me.
That's kind of strange. Like the idea is for vegans and vegetarians to scratch it when they're eating to release the smell of bacon. Charles Spence, a professor of the experimental psychology at the University of Oxford, believes it will help people to imagine that they're eating bacon even though they're not. Scratch and sniff to pretend like you're eating bacon.
Right. If it's that hard, just eat some damn bacon. Like if you need a patch for a scratch and sniff to get over your cravings, just have a little bacon.
Yeah. You know, I know it's going to sound strange, but I do know vegetarians actually do eat bacon. Like, that's their only cheat. And you say, well, they're not vegetarians. Oh, they are. It's just that that's their one go-to that they have to, that they go to from time to time.
I just don't get how smelling it's going to make you not eat it. It's like, hey, here's popcorn. In, like someone's cooking popcorn. You don't want to eat it because it smells delicious.
I don't know. Like, hey, this guy's from Oxford, so he's smarter than us combined. So smart, he's dumb by putting this together.
Right, too smart.
So Florida man's paint job on $528,000 home has neighbors seeing red. Of course, this would happen in Florida, Naples, Florida. A paint job on a Southwest Florida home is either an artistic statement or a job inspired by a child throwing colors against the wall. Either way, the job has residents in a Naples subdivision seeing red, yellow too, and even splashes of green and purple and blue. This home makeover was extreme. A van in the driveway was spray painted with the phrase, "Who is Omar?" Neighbors said that the paint job became worse during the course of a week. Not even the mailbox escaped the painter's attention. Now the management company for the, it's called Regalo, I believe it's R-E-G-A-L-O, said that the cost to repaint the home could be in the hundreds of thousands. Can't believe it, this guy said. I absolutely can't believe someone would do something like this. Who was checking on his friend's home when he told the radio, told the television station? So, a Florida man's paint job, $528,000 home, and it's all these different colors with, again, all these different colors. Now, who is Omar?
That's the mystery. And is Omar an artist, or what is Omar trying to do here? Is it Omar Epps? Is it Omar from The Wire? Like, what's going on?
I don't know who this is. I just know that I'd be pretty pissed.
Oh, my God. Flip it over. The picture's actually on the other side. You'll see the whole, he paints literally the whole house. All the siding, the windows, the mailbox, the garage, everything. He paints everything.
Your eyes, you look like you just saw a ghost when you saw that.
Oh, just got pissed there because I'm thinking, what if that's my house, right? It looks like a child did all this, right? It looks like a kid did this.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's like one of these, it's like one of these homes that you see like in the islands or whatever.
Exactly. Just bright colors and all over the place. Yes, exactly what it looks like.
On my honeymoon in Antigua again. Good Lord, man. Like all these different colors and these, I mean, it's great if a child was painting a home, but I mean, some clown did that. I just want to throttle that guy.
I'd be. Imagine coming home from a vacation and that's your home.
Whew. Wow. That's a 2,500 square foot living space, and someone did that to it. Whoever Omar is.
Omar, you sneaky, sneaky SOB.
Yeah, you'd get a beat down.
Yep, you would.
We always love lists, especially Super Bowl lists, right?
All right, so I found a bunch of random Super Bowl facts. Did you know, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Super Bowl Sunday in America is the second largest food consumption day?
Yes.
Number one?
Some holiday, right?
Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
That will make sense.
Yeah.
So this is, there hasn't been real studies, but there is a big persistent rumor that at halftime of the Super Bowl, many cities have problems with their sewage system because of the mass amount of people getting up to go to the bathroom.
Come on, man. That's, you know who that's on? That is on the people that you invite. If you know Andy is a guy that's going to, is a big guy or someone that has a weak stomach or whatever, you know that you don't invite him to the party.
Right. I'm sorry. Or you, he gets like four wings. You're not eating 15 wings. I'm sorry today.
You give that guy a porta potty outside.
Exactly. You just roll one in.
You're not going to mess up my plumbing because you got a bad stomach. Oh boy, it's those nachos again. Jesus Christ, what do we do? Oh, you don't want that. That's brutal.
It is. It's awful. So you know how a lot of the Super Bowl MVPs always say, I'm going to Disney World?
Yes.
Well, that started in Super Bowl 21, reading Roman numerals. Mm-hmm. Disney paid both Phil Simms and John Elway, because those are the two quarterbacks in the Super Bowl, whether they won or not, they both got paid $75,000. So if they won at the end of the game saying, I'm going to Disney World.
So that is a year after the Bears went to the Super Bowl.
Correct.
So Peyton or Fridge Perry or Jim McMahon got aced out of that.
Yeah, they did. They missed it by a year. By a year.
That's not
even
right.
Even John Elway got the same exact money, even though he never got to say it.
That's not right. I love these Super Bowl facts, and that is Tales from the Hood right here on ESPN 1000. So what do you do with your money when it comes to the Super Bowl? You love prop bets? Oh, we love prop bets.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
I know the leagues. I know the teams. I know these players. I know this wonderful game called football.
It's time for Value Bet.
Oh, this is when the cream rises to the top. This is when things get hot.
The largest sports wagering angles you need to know.
Stats, records, rankings, weather. If the goalpost is tilted just a little bit.
Value Bet on Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
You can bet your children's, unborn children's, children on these six games.
Value Bet.
This is America's premier sports information program.
Here's Jonathan Hood.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the TuneIn app. It is time for Value Bet. Super Bowl's right around the corner. There's so much money to spend, to win, and to lose, I guess. We go to the Action Network. Matt Friedman joins us here for Value Bet as we get ready for San Francisco and Kansas City right here on ESPN 1000. Matt, Jonathan Hood, thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure. It's fantastic to be talking about such a great game.
Yes. But we've got to win some money here, Matt. So the game's fine, but we got to get to the money. So tell me this, Matt. What is your general philosophy when it comes to prop bets? Do you have a philosophy or an angle?
Oh, yeah. So I came at this from someone who started in fantasy sports, so I tend to be very numbers-oriented, very focused on player production. And generally, the unders tend to be the sharp side on a lot of player props. People like to bet on something to happen. They want to see receptions, yards, touchdowns. They don't want to bet on something not happening, which means that the props tend to get inflated just a little bit. So historically, that creates value on the unders, and that is especially the case in the Super Bowl when you have even more people betting on player props.
I just went through some numbers about Garoppolo, and it is the polar opposite of the general theme that Garoppolo can't get the ball down the field, that he's going to heavily rely on the running game. I believe that either way, whether it's going to be a heavy run game for San Francisco or Garoppolo getting down the field, he can be able to provide both. So what are you doing as far as the running game for either Kansas City or San Francisco? Any props stand out to you from that standpoint?
Yeah, it's interesting if you look at the numbers. I think it's going to come down to Damian Williams, going to come down to Raheem Mostert. What we've seen with Damian Williams in the 10 games when he's actually been the locked-in lead back for the Chiefs, the 10 games when he's had at least a 60% snap rate, and mind you, in the playoffs so far, he's had a 90% snap rate. So we're not even looking at like the elite of the elite for his snap rate. We're looking at just the games in which he's out there as the main guy. He has been a pretty dominant force, getting around 60 to 70 rushing yards per game. And right now you can bet his prop around 50.5 rushing yards per game. So he's one of the few players where I'm actually, I'd say, bullish on his overs. I also like him over 3.5 receptions for this game. In the games in which he's really been the lead back, he's averaged 5 receptions per game. So I think there's quite a bit of value on the over for him. I don't think the market has quite caught up to his value yet and the role that he has in that backfield.
I'm Matt Friedman from the Action Network with Jonathan Hood on Under the Hood on ESPN 1000 and the TuneIn app. Okay, as far as the quarterbacks are concerned, you know, Garoppolo, Patrick Mahomes, anything that stands out to you maybe as far as rushing attempts for either one? Well, definitely Mahomes, because I've seen it at Westgate at over under 4.5 as far as rushing attempts for Mahomes. Anything that stands out to you about the Mahomes side of the ledger?
Yeah, what's interesting about Mahomes, I don't really have much of a say on the rushing attempts number. That feels about right. But the rushing yardage, this has continued to creep up. And you can find it now around 32, 33.5 at some books. And I like the under there. And I think it's been inflated because in the past 2 playoff games, we have seen Mahomes take off with his legs and really be able to produce in that way. But for the most part, he's a guy, when he has the capability to stay in the pocket and to pass, that's what he prefers to do. And I think the 49ers, seeing what he has done in the playoffs so far, knowing that if he gets out of the pocket, not only as a runner can he really create, but that's where he can really do a lot of damage through the air. I think they're going to try to keep him contained in the pocket. So I'm taking the under on his rushing total.
Anything defensively stand out for either team as far as prop bets for the Super Bowl?
Not really, to be honest. You know, the 49ers aren't much of a ball-hawking defense, which seems kind of strange because they are the number one pass defense in the league. All year, they were right up there with the Patriots in terms of the yards that they were allowing, but they weren't really creating a lot of turnovers through the air. They were pretty good at creating fumbles, but that can be a little hit or miss. So in terms of the defenses, I'm kind of staying away and focusing much more on the offensive side of the ball.
So, Matt, the latest I saw earlier this afternoon is Kansas City, a 1.5-point favorite. I don't know if you have a different number. I saw it at 1 yesterday. Now it's up to 1.5. I'm almost looking to maybe not even do anything with it, because if it's that close to a coin flip, I'm probably just going to go all props, because if it's that close, I don't know who's going to win, but I can be able to get my money through the props. How do you see it? Are you going to do anything with that spread?
Yeah, you know, early in the week, I did put a little bit, just a little bit on the 49ers at +1.5, because, you know, I think this is a coin flip game. And, you know, if I can get +1.5 on a team that I think has a reasonable shot at winning, I really don't mind that, especially with Dee Ford and this defense coming back. You know, I mean, I really can see the path for the 49ers winning this game. But as you say, I mean, it's a great game. It's a tight game. Either of these teams could easily win, and so I can see just staying away from the game in general and investing in the prop market, which in general tends to be more exploitable anyway.
So if you're handcuffed and they say you got to do something with the over under, would you do anything with that? Because I saw that at, what was it, yesterday it was 54, I think it was as high as 54.5. I'm leaning over. How do you see that?
Yeah, so it opened around 51.5 last week, and it got slammed with some sharp money and a lot of public money, too. Everyone at this point is on the over, and it's really driving it up. I saw it at one point today, 55.5 at one book. And at that point, I really would be inclined to take a little bit on the under. And so at 55.5, I did take a position on the under, but it's not a big position. It's just the way that I lean. I think more often than not, because the 49ers, I think they're going to try to slow the game down. They're going to run the ball against a Kansas City defense that isn't as good against the run. And then I think with their defense, they don't give up a lot of deep passes. So I think they're going to force the Chiefs to have to extend drives. And with their front four, they can get pressure. I can easily see how this game shoots out. But I think more often than not, it stays under 55.5. So again, I took a little position, but it's not as if I'm, you know, like putting a lot on it. As you say, I'm much more focused on the props. I think that's where the money is.
What's the silliest prop that you've seen? And what's your philosophy on that? Do you do the flavor Gatorade stuff?
Oh man, not really, because there's no edge. You know, like I can't predict what the color is. I mean, it red. We'll just say it's probably going to be red. You know, but who really knows? The national anthem props, I love doing research on that. But again, that's just kind of a shot in the dark. If people who bet on coin flips, I just get out of here. Like, I can't go that way, because literally you're just betting on coin flips and, you know, you're paying money to do it. That said, if you do see a prop out there about the winner of the coin flip, whether they will defer or they will receive, the 49ers, every game this year, they have chosen to receive. The Chiefs, every game this year, they have chosen to receive. So if you happen to see that prop out there, smash it, because it is a 100% lock, unless history proves otherwise, right? Unless they go against what they've done previously. It is very, very likely that whoever wins the coin toss is choosing to receive.
It's crazy. These prop bets on some of these silly ones, they're just unbelievable. Matt, it's so strange. Gosh.
Yep.
Well, I'm glad you spent some time, man. Thanks so much for coming on, and enjoy Sunday.
My pleasure. You guys have a great night.
It is Matt Friedman from the Action Network with us on UTA.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
SportsCenter soon.